in a tear of uncharity. Come in a tear of uncharity. Dire out of Madhava Kundavihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Bhadava Girivada Dhani. Jaya Gopi Jana Bhadava Girivada Dhani. Krishna Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunda Bihari. Vishnu Pada Paramaham Sabana Vakacharya Vastu Tadashita Sri Shimane Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sikoho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kundi Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We've been hearing from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam lately regarding the appearance of Krishna. In 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord explains, actually what he says in the 7th canto is like a continuation of what he introduces in the 4th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Viti Tattvataha Takta Deha Purna Janma Naiti Ma Meti Sojina. Very worthy verse to contemplate as we conclude our gathering for the celebration of the appearance of Sri Krishna, followed so appropriately, or connected so significantly with the appearance day of Srila Prabhupada. The most significant and worshipable event in the life of the whole creation is the appearance day of the Lord. And the sanctity and glory and significance of that day is shared with the appearance of the spiritual master. And so appropriate that Srila Prabhupada appeared on Nandotsava, the festival of Nanda Maharaj, because Krishna took birth at midnight. Mother Yashoda was in such a delirious state from the ordeal of childbirth, very late in age, and even her own attendant nurse was off on an errand, so she was all alone. She didn't even realize in her labor that she had given birth. And nobody realized until the next morning when her nurse came in and there's just a baby. Nandarani, Nandarani, she woke her up. You have a baby. And then, on that day, Nandotsava, the auspicious, jubilant, hopeful news was spread throughout the land that a child has been born. Very appropriate that on that day Srila Prabhupada took birth, because his mission was to spread throughout the whole world the message of Krishna. So Krishna introduces us in the fourth chapter, Bhagavad Gita, to the benefits which accrue contemplating the significance of his birth in this world. One who contemplates his jhana, karma, which are divyam, he himself no longer has to take birth. Such is the potency of hearing Krishna's message, Krishna's lila, Krishna's holy name. Lord Brahma, the creator, secondary creator of this universe, and original guru in this sampradaya, in his beautiful prayers to Lord Sri Krishna after his pastime of stealing the cows and cowherd boys, so many beautiful, wonderful, profoundly significant prayers. He said that this, just by hearing the transcendental message, pastimes, name, transcendental vibration emanating from Krishna, then one can conquer the Supreme Lord. And what does he mean by conquering the Supreme Lord? The Supreme Lord cannot even be apprehended. He cannot be comprehended by material senses or mind or intellect. He reveals himself through the process of submissive oral reception. And Lord Brahma says, by that process, he who is ajita, unconquerable, becomes conquered. But what does he mean? He means that, actually, and Sanatana Goswami elaborates, the Lord becomes conquered in three ways. First of all, the devotee becomes victorious in three ways: body, mind, and words. By his words, he can call the Lord to his side. By his body, he can take the Lord by the hand. And by his mind, he can contemplate the glorious appearance and pastimes of the Lord, which janma karma chamaya divya assures that we no longer have to take birth in this material world. Tyakta deha punar. No longer coming back to chew the chewed, seeking satisfaction at what cannot offer pleasure to the spirit, which is material nature. So Krishna becomes conquered in these three ways, and the devotee, Sanatana Goswami compares it to non-devotees who are always trying to conquer the Lord, really, whether through... So by their rocket ships, they go into outer space, but they can't even see the extent of this one tiny, insignificant, smallest of all universes. What to speak of what's beyond the Brahma Jyoti, the Viraja, and beyond that, the Vaikuntha, and beyond that, Ayodhya, and beyond that, Dwarka, Mathura, beyond that, Goloka, Vrindavan, where Krishna takes birth. So the non-devotees are always trying to conquer, but the devotees, Krishna becomes conquered in three ways: by our hearing and repeating the message of Godhead, and the devotee becomes victorious in that by his words, which are always glorifying the Lord, he calls the Lord to his side. By his mind, which is always contemplating topics regarding the Lord, he becomes purified and understanding what cannot be comprehended by material mind, intelligence, or senses. Assures our conquest over all of material nature. And by his body, he can actually take the Lord's hand, which the Lord extends to his devotee. When the Lord is conquered, and how is the Lord conquered? By a single, simple thread of love. The hundreds of feet of rope in Brajbhumi, all tied together, could not encompass Sri Krishna, but the single thread of Jasoda's love bound him. So, Bahunam Atmanam Ante Gyanavam Nam Prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlava. Krishna continues in 7th canto that after many births and deaths, and in that context, Krishna is referring to the desire which the living entity should pursue of acquiring knowledge and performing charity and regularly attending the temple and performing sacrifice. When he arrives at the proper conclusion, he surrenders unto Vasudev and knowing him to be all in all. So Krishna says, I'm the fragrance of the earth, the light of the sun, the life of all, the austerity of the ascetics. I'm everything, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna. And he revealed to him in his universal form things terrestrial and celestial and transcendental, which can never be apprehended by material senses. He revealed it all to everything. And he explained that I am in everything and everything is me in me. And then Arjuna asked, then why doesn't everybody just surrender to you? And Krishna explains that the lost souls who are lost to their actual nature look for their nature in the roots where they can't be found in material nature. Thinking that the transformations of material nature is all in all, seeking their roots and their future and their hopes and their prospects in material nature, which is all they can see with their senses and mind. But they cannot recognize who is Avyayam, enduring, who is not a product of material nature. And wondering how this delusion could come upon the conditioned souls that they can't even recognize Krishna, and how they can be delivered, Krishna points to his own heart. This is how they can be delivered, by understanding me to be all in all, within everything, everything within it, but not part of material nature, and yet distinct from everything. So Vasudeva's prayers upon the appearance of Sri Krishna in the dungeon are very significant. He's explaining that it's so wonderful, and yet it's one way he explains it's so wonderful that you've appeared, Actually, he also says it's not so wonderful because you're everywhere. You're all-pervading. And all-pervading means that everything is within Krishna. And Krishna is within everything. Nothing can exist without being within Krishna, and nothing can exist without Krishna within it. It is from the childlike form of Gopal in Vrajbhumi that this emanation, this illumination called Brahma Jyoti, which is all-pervading, holds within it everything that be. The spiritual creation, the material universes, everything is within the Brahma Jyoti. And within that Brahma Jyoti, which is a manifestation of Krishna, outside of which there is nothing, Krishna expands himself as Karana Dakshai Vishnu, the collective supersoul of all living entities. He expands himself further as Kiradakshai Vishnu, the supersoul of the universe, who expands himself further as the supersoul of every living entity, who expands himself further as the supersoul of every little universe called the atom, and within and between every atom is Krishna. So Krishna is within everything, and everything is within Krishna. This is what we mean, that Krishna is all-pervading. And yet, I am not manifest to the fools and miscreants. To them I am covered by my curtain of yoga maya. The rule is that that curtain of yoga maya, which is to fulfill the aspirations of the living entities who want to be independent of Krishna, it conceals his transcendental nature from their conditioned senses. Krishna cannot be perceived by the material senses or the conditioned mind or the limited intellect of the human. And yet we're coming together to celebrate Krishna's appearance, which appears contradictory. And Krishna is appearing before us in the prison of Kamsa, in the form of Sri Sri Radhavindavan Chandra. His pure devotee from the spiritual world, Srila Prabhupada, appeared in our midst. This appears contradictory because Krishna is saying that he's never manifest to the fools and unintelligent. That is his own law. And it's not that Krishna violates his law, but there is a higher law. The highest law is the law of love, which is without laws, really. And it is out of his infinite compassion, born of that love, that Krishna reveals himself in this world. When devotees were asking Srila Prabhupada about the nature of Krishna's omnipotence, and people always seem to have this idea that if Krishna is omnipotent and he knows everything, everything we've ever done, everything we'll ever do, then where is the scope for our free will? I don't know how it is that people seem to think that Krishna's being omnipotent somehow restrains or negates our free will. The fact that Krishna knows what we're going to do doesn't mean he controls what we're going to do as far as the use of our free will. But Srila Prabhupada's answer was typical of his perfect integrity of practicality along with his infinite wisdom. He said, yes, Krishna knows what you're going to do. You're going to rot forever in the material world if he doesn't appear and reveal the path of liberation. Not liberation from misery, but freedom to love Krishna, which is only possible with the grace of Krishna, which necessitates hearing about Krishna, hearing his pastimes, his instructions. And even though we come before the form of the Lord, our tears welling up in our eyes and our hair standing on end and our heart just melting. If not, then the Bhagavatam explains that certainly that heart is steel framed which upon chanting the holy name of the Lord does not overflow with ecstasy, manifesting in tears and the hair standing on end. So, what to do if the heart is steel framed? That means it's like a dungeon. If we examine the conditions of our hearts and the conditioned state of life, the proper conclusion would be that they are like a dungeon. And it would be an utterly hopeless situation if not for the historical reality that Krishna appeared in a dungeon. So, in other words, just as this dungeon has a curtain, and when the curtain is open and we see Vasudeva Krishna appearing in the dungeon, Shishi Radha Vrindavan Chandra appearing in Vrindavan, Krishna sometimes opens that curtain of Yoga Maya to give us a glimpse, to give us hope. And he explains the reasons for him coming, that to annihilate the miscreants, to reward the pious. But that's, we have to go deep into what Krishna is really saying here, because he doesn't need to come to reward the pious and annihilate the miscreants. Material nature is quite competent for that. But when Krishna annihilates the miscreants, he doesn't just kill the body, he kills their subtle body, the mind, their mentality, within which all their aversion and rebellion and envy of Krishna is contained, and thus they're liberated, not in the mere act of being killed by Krishna, but in the newfound love, awakening by the demise of their subtle body. So when Krishna annihilates the miscreants, he's far superior to being annihilated by material nature. But most of all, Krishna appears to please his devotees. And what is it that pleases the devotees? The devotees who have that love for Krishna, they want to see that love shared. They want to see everyone develop a sharing in that love for Krishna. And how can the world share in love for Krishna without the appearance of Krishna? So Krishna appears to please his devotees. For what purpose? To attract our hearts back to the eternal shelter of his loving service. So Krishna told Vasudeva Krishna in that dungeon, he told Vasudeva and Devaki of their previous births. And he revealed himself as Vishnu, holding conch, club, disc, and lotus. And he explained, and he reminded them that lifetimes ago, as Prishni and Sutapa, they performed tapasya for 12,000 celestial years, at which time I appeared to you. He reminded them. And I asked, what is the desire of your hearts? They said, we want to have a son like you. And Krishna said, well, there's nobody like me. Therefore, I'll have to become your son. Again and again and again. As Krishna garb, as Vamana, and now as Krishna. And when did Krishna appear? After, actually, the narration begins in the Bhagavatam with, you know, Bhumi going to Brahma, and Brahma with the devas going to the shore of the milk ocean, and they're praying. And Lord Vishnu, they did not see him, but Lord Brahma heard him, Tene Brahma Hira Yadi Kaviye. And he told the message to the demigods and informed them to take birth in Vrindavan. And the sages took birth as cows because they could please Krishna by offering their milk. And it's interesting that Krishna says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. He's talking about himself as Vasudev. The one who understands Vasudev, also referring to the Vasudev platform, being like Vasudev. And what was Vasudev like? He was such a man of honor that Kamsa. It's helpful to understand the symbology here because it very much enhances our sadhana. Kamsa personifies fear. And that's very helpful to the devotees. So Kamsa, who personifies fear, actually it's interesting to understand his actual nature. He, the son of Ugrasena, such a saintly, pious king, how did he have a demon son like Kamsa? When Ugrasena's wife, young and beautiful wife, was playing in the garden, and a Rakshasa was passing over his airplane, he saw it, he was captivated by her charm, and he landed, and he, by his mystic abilities, assumed a form just like King Ugrasena. And, you know, it was springtime in a beautiful garden. She was playing, and you know what happens. So she saw, my husband's coming. And he had some obvious desire. And from that interaction with this Rakshasa, who just deceptively appeared like Ugrasena, Kamsa was born. So he was such a demon, but he was such a gentleman because he had such affection for Devaki. So demons and material nature can be a very affectionate, appear very affectionate. It's all deceptive. Simply hearing that voice from the sky, Kamsa, you fool. You're driving your sister's chariot, but you don't know her eighth child will kill you. So in an instant, he grabs her by the hair, draws his sword, and is ready to cut off her head right in the middle of her auspicious, jubilant wedding procession. And Vasudeva was bleeding in so many ways. But he could not appease Kamsa except by telling him that, I will turn over all my children to you. That was the only way he could save the life of Devaki. So Kamsa, fear personified, who personifies fear, what fear? Fear of material nature. You know, you may think that material nature can be so nice, your relatives and politicians can be so friendly and so helpful, but look at Kamsa. It's all based on self-interest, selfish interest, which is always changing. So he was so affectionate to Devaki, his cousin's sister, but one message from the sky, one line, and he's ready to behead her. So we should not place our faith and hopes in material nature, because Kamsa reveals the actual face of that energy. And he was so insecure himself. He was such a politician. So insecure. He married the daughters of Jarasandha. Why? Largely because he wanted such a powerful demoniac ally. And Jarasandha came down from Bihar with his armies to attend the marriage. And Kamsa was pleading with his sentiments that, oh, your daughters need protection, so leave some of your army here. So he made alliance with Jarasandha. And he was also thinking that if anybody could prevent him from an uprising, it was Vasudev, who was so powerful. So, after, you know, Narada informed Kamsa that, you know, you were previously killed by Krishna as Kalanemi. So, and then he arrested Vasudeva and Devaki, put them in the dungeon. Yeah. And then Ugrasena was so outraged. How could he do such a thing that he came? Because Ugrasena was the king's, Kamsa was a Senapati general in his army. Ugrasena came, how could you do such a thing? And then he had Ugrasena arrested because he was backed up by the army of Jarasandha. He threw him in the dungeon as well. So if you think that, you know, material associates can be very loving, just remember Kamsa. But that was very beneficial, because Devaki, in that fear, you know, when Vasudeva handed over his first son, comes to saw that he's such a man of honor. Oh, just keep him. It's not the first son, I fear. Just keep your son. But Devaki and Vasudev had no faith in Kamsa's words. They know, if someone cannot control their senses, and nobody can control their senses, only Hrishikesh can control their senses, so we can only trust in Krishna, in those who are devoted to the will of Krishna. So, then in that prison, you see the extent of the fear that six sons, Vasudeva and Devaki, had to witness being brutally slaughtered before their very eyes, just upon their birth, when the guards informed him, he'd come running and just smash those children on a stone. And it's not that, Vasudeva and Devaki are like yogis, they're just, we're not that body. Devotees are very sensitive. Devaki was screaming and Vasudeva was pleading and Kamsa just, no mercy. So, you understand the nature of material energy and how it can be very helpful to devotees to have a healthy fear of material association. And the positive part of that is taking shelter of Krishna. So, taking shelter of Krishna in his mind, in his meditation, the form of Krishna appeared in the mind of Vasudev, who then manifests in his heart to be transferred to the heart of Devaki to manifest from her womb, and appearing in the dungeon as Vishnu assured them of all protection. And then they were fearful that Kamsa would try to kill him, so he transformed himself into a little baby. And then, now consider why Krishna refers to himself as Vasudev. Vasudev platform means being like Vasudev. Vasudev, Vasu means the abode of the Lord. And what was the nature of Vasudev? Such a man of honor, prepared and willing to undergo such ordeal, such trauma, such sacrifice for the sake of the Lord's appearance, of handing over all his sons and having to go through this repeated, unbelievable, inconceivable trauma of seeing those newborn babies smashed on the stone slab before their very eyes. Not that this is what we have to offer to prepare for the appearance, but the depth and the extent and the willingness which Vasudev personifies, we have to be prepared to honor and embrace for Krishna to take birth in our own consciousness, in our own hearts. And then after that tremendous ordeal, then Krishna, and then he left. He told Nanda to take me to Braj. He told Vasudev, take me to Nanda's and bring back her daughter. So, and then by the influence of Yogamaya, see, first, after the six, and who are the six sons? They're Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, who were previously the sons of Marichi, who is the incarnation of the mind. People are so attached to their mind and they like to cultivate their mind by getting all kinds of crazy knowledge, so-called knowledge. It's really all ignorance in the universities. And what's the offspring of the mind? Lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy. Who were cursed because early in creation, they laughed in a very disrespectful way to the great soul Brahma, who was acting inappropriately, but that was not a proper response. And therefore they had to take birth as demons. They became the sons of Kalanemi, who was the son of Hiranyakashipu. And understanding their mistake and seeking shelter, they approached Lord Brahma for protection from siddhas and devas and yogis and apsaras and gandharvas and demons and everybody. And when Hiranyakashi Lord Brahma awarded that benediction. And when Hiranyakashipu came to hear of this, he was enraged. He took shelter of someone other than me, the Lord of the universe, Hiranyakashipu, and he cursed them. You'll be killed by your own father. In your next life, Kalanami became Kamsa. And Narada Muni even reminded him, because he wanted to speed up the appearance of the Lord. So symbolically, Devaki is the goddess of devotion. And by that fear of material nature, she did not put any faith in the material world. Which, you know, Krishna appears to purify the world and to leave for posterity a process of sadhana. And that process of sadhana is personified in his pastimes of birth and what preceded his birth. We have to give up association with kam, krodha, lobha, moha, madhavatsarya, the offspring of the mind. And fear of material nature is essential, that we don't cultivate more material affection, but place our affection in those who are trustworthy. Those who are actually loving, meaning the devotees of the Lord. Representatives of the most loving person, Sri Krishna. So, then Vasudev brought back the daughter of Jashoda, who is Yogamaya, who affects our union. So first, Baladev appeared after the six sons of Devaki had been slaughtered. Baladev appeared in the womb of Devaki. He's the original guru. He makes a nice atmosphere and arrangements for the appearance of Krishna. And then by his wonderful arrangement, Yogamaya predominates. And then when Kamsa heard that there's a seventh child, Yogamaya, he raised her just to smash her on the stone like he did, and then she just flew in the sky in her friend. To him, she became Durga. Very intimidating with all her weapons and her the beast of prey on whom she rides, the tiger. And threatened him, come, you stop these, you fool, you can't kill me. The child who is destined to kill, he's already born. Now stop these atrocities to your poor sister and brother-in-law. And she disappeared. And he was all the more fearful. He was seeing Krishna everywhere in his dreams and his whatever he was seeing, but not favorably. He was Krishna conscious, but not in a recommended way. He was seeing Krishna everywhere, but in fear. And that's the antithesis of love. Perfect love dispels all fear. Meanwhile, in Braj, you know, Nanda Maharaj, when he married Mother Jashoda, actually Nanda Maharaj wasn't the son of Parjanya Maharaj who was destined to become king. Upananda was the elder brother, but he saw that Nanda Maharaj is such a virtuous soul. So let him become king. I'll just be his servant. The Vrijabhasi's spirit is so wonderful because there's no envy. And that's why it's so sweet. So he said, let him become Nanda Maharaj. He's so virtuous. Such good qualities. And I'll be his servant. And then the Vrijabhasi's were so delighted to have such a loving, father-like figure as Nanda as their king. And then when he married Mother Jashoda, they were so delighted in such a perfect match of devoted souls. But then, for so many decades, they had no children. And then gradually, this festive spirit of Braj was overcast with this cloud of gloom that now entering and proceeding and progressing into old age, they have no child. And then why didn't Nanda Maharaj perform some, you know, people perform all kinds of rituals and things, but he was so dedicated to the Lord. He said, it's in the Lord's hands. So even though everyone had grown hopeless, that Nanda and Yashoda are now a very elderly couple. They have no child. What is the hope at this point in their life? But Nanda Maharaj, he was always hopeful. And then he confided one night in Mother Yashoda that, you know, I don't want to perform any rituals for offspring because it's in the Lord's hand. But I feel that we actually have a son. I not only feel, but sometimes I see in your lap this dark child, luminous, though dark, effulgent. And I sometimes see him on your lap. This child is more attractive than even my Lord Narayan. So how can this be? Who can this be? And then Mother Yashoda, well, Baba, I never would have said anything, but since you are his, I also feel, and I sometimes see this child is more attractive even than Lord Narayan. And then that night, massaging his lotus feet, she fell into a slumber. And then she had a dream. And then she would give birth, and then her breasts began to swell and her abdomen began, when she woke up she was pregnant. But before that, you know, about the time, because Mother just showed it, said, why don't we perform this Mahadwadasi Vrat, which is so powerful in Braj? And yes, we will. And then they had an assembly, which they would often do when there was some difficulties or problems or challenges to be solved. They had the assembly with Sunanda and Upananda giving advice. And in that assembly, everyone was astonished at the appearance of this elderly lady wearing saffron, with this young son who was a brahmachari, and very effulgent. They all stood up to offer respect. Who is this unexpected guest who is like the internal energy of the Lord, gracing our presence? She said, my name is Purnamasi. I'm a tapasvini. But I'm also very expert in the astrological sciences. And I've come because Nandarani is to become pregnant. And I've come to observe the birth of her child. And the Brijavasis were so elated to hear. And they offered her, you can take up residence. She said, yes, I would like to reside here on the bank of this Kalindi, who is also known as Krishna, because her dark waters will be witness to the sporting pastimes of Krishna. And then Nandarani actually developed the features of pregnancy, and everyone was so elated. And she had her own private room to give birth and her own private nurse. But the nurse somehow one night was off on some errand and was not present when Nandarani delivered the child. She delivered herself in old age without even the assistance of a nurse. And she was so fatigued that she forgot who she gave birth to. And when the nurse came in the morning, Nandarani, Nandarani, it's a boy. And she walked, well, get Nanda. So that's for Nanda. Nanda came running and thought, well, now I have to tell the Brahmins. So he ran, but I have to see the child. So he came running, and the nurse, get out of here, tell the Brahmins. And he went running, and he was just running back and forth like a little child, so elated. And he went and saw his new son, and the news spread throughout Braj. They tried to keep it from going beyond Braj because they didn't want Kamsa to find out, but it was so such a festive occasion. And then everyone's desires were thus fulfilled. So, it's not historical. It is a historical event, in a sense. But the appearance of Krishna is a transcendental event, revealing itself through the medium of history. History is the medium. Because Krishna's, he's always taking birth in some universe. And he's always taking birth in the mind and the heart of the surrendered souls who are like Vasudeva, willing to do anything for the Lord's pleasure. Srila Prabhupada emphasized, don't try to see Krishna. You can't see Krishna. We come before the deity, we have faith. This is the Lord, but our tears welling in our eyes. Is our heart overflowing with ecstasy in the form of tears? And here's no. We have faith, some faith. But we don't have the qualification. We can't have the qualification. The qualification comes from Krishna. That when he's pleased, he reveals himself. And he's pleased by our following his instructions to come to him. So those instructions are recorded by Vyasadeva and elaborated further by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Vyasadeva and Gaurlila, who explains, he analyzes the thoughts of Krishna regarding his appearance and his lamentation after he appeared, that really the world wasn't attracted in his thoughts to come again as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And Vyasadeva is aptly called Krishna Dvaipayana, the author who was born on the island, and who created an island refuge in the vast ocean of all his literary achievement, which all are directed to Krishna. There is one refuge, which is like an island, which is Krishna's pastimes, compiled after Narada. You know, asked him, why are you so dissatisfied after you're compiling all the Vedas and dividing them and editing them and adding the Puranas and the Mahabharata and the Itihasas and the Samhitas? You're still not satisfied. Yeah, I know. I don't know why. And Vyasadeva and Narada said, because you have not really emphasized the pastimes of Krishna, which are all attractive and which alone can really attract our hearts and melt our hearts, which are steel framed, and make them malleable for his pastimes and service. So then Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, which has as its crest jewel the 10th canto. And we further learn from Chaitanya Charita how the Supreme Lord is himself ever yearning to become free from his divine fetters. He's learning. And as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami he reveals the Lord's heart, that everywhere in the world people worship me in awe and reverence, but that makes love crippled and feeble, and it doesn't attract my heart so much as cowherd boy climbing on my shoulders. What kind of big man are you? We're equal. Or Mother Yashoda binding me, or my beloved consort reproaching me in a sulky mood. Krishna says that steals my mind, or you can also say liberates, frees my mind from the dutiful reverential, for my duty of hearing the reverential hymns of the Vedas. Just like when Lord Brahma was offering his prayers to Krishna, which we were discussing previously, and Krishna was very dutifully hearing his prayers. But Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur reveals that Krishna was feeling and thinking in his own mind, who is this four-headed person and where has he come from and what is he talking about? I just want to find my friends, the cows and the cowherd boys. So Krishna very dutifully accepts our worship. But that doesn't really fully attract him. He's attracted only by pure love. So Krishna himself is desiring liberation from his duty as the all pervading, omniscient, supreme personality of Godhead. He dutifully accepts that role. But we learn from Chaitanya Charitamrita that he's so attracted to the holy name, which liberates the sadhanas from their material imperfections and liberates the Lord from his reverential, dutiful having to hear the reverential hymns of the Vedas. Krishna's attracted by love. He's bound by love and he's ever yearning for the freedom from his lordly restraints to interact lovingly. But where's that freedom to play for the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Where's that place to play? To play as if conquered by Sri Dhamma. That place is Vrindavan. And therefore, when the Lord appeared with all of his emblems of glory and majesty, he said, take me to Vrindavan. And when he appeared in Braj, he had to close his hands so that Mother Jashoda couldn't see the emblems of divinity. And the demigods had to pray in the other room because it would spoil the mood of Vrindavan if Mother Jashoda saw it. And when Mother Jashoda saw her son, and she bent over the bed, and the milk was flowing spontaneously. It was a personified ecstasy and affection from her hearts, flowing spontaneously, bathing the child in her milk. That was his first Abhishek. And then the younger matron said, well, that's not... And she took... No, you nurse him by holding him in your embrace. And then she began to nurse him. So Krishna wanted a playground with proper playmates because he always wanted to play. But when he came in his various forms as Matsya and Varaha, who could he play with? He tried, and how could he interact lovingly with humans in the form of an 8-million-mile-long fish? It was very pleasing and liberating to the fish. And he interacted with them, but the humans were alienated. So he tried a form half human and half animal, Lord Nrisingadev. But he couldn't interact intimately with them. Everybody was alienated, except Prahlad. He said, I'm not fooled by your blood-soaked mane and your blood-soaked teeth and your fangs and your blood-soaked... I know who you are. And everybody else was terrified. So he wanted to, but where's the, how, that didn't work. There was no sweet intimacy of loving dealings in that form. I mean, there was with Prahlad, but the rest of the world is pretty much alienated, both human and animal. So he came back. He'd come as a king, as an ascetic, and as a scholar, but never really intimate, loving, sweet dealings with not only the humans, but the animals and the environment and everything and everyone. Therefore, he came back as Krishna. And he chose his playmates, and he chose his playground, and he chose as his playmates those who would forfeit any other role than that of the play. And he incorporated two kinds of play, one with rules and regulations and one without. And the desire that the play with rules and regulations, meaning sadhana, would, by the influence of the association of the nitya siddhas, blossom into spontaneous loving play, forgetful that he is God, because how can we lovingly, sweetly interact and play with him for his pleasure? So sadhana is meant to evolve into that spontaneous attraction where love follows its own rules. And that is recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, crossing over Jamuna, when Vasudeva was going, you know, the river didn't initially part. He had to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until he couldn't breathe. The Jamuna was over his mouth, and he just raised and said, he was calling out, can somebody please take my child? He was only concerned for his child's pleasure. Even when he went back in the prison, he did love Krishna, even though he couldn't witness. But he was always hearing reports. And when he heard that the demons are coming, he was so, and when he heard that he was playing, he was so happy. But when he was going underwater, he was crying out, "Can someone take my child?" Then Krishna put his lotus feet down and touched the water, and Jamuna was so satisfied that she just parted and allowed, just like, anyway, allowed free entry, just like Prabhupada and the Devadutta, allowed free entry, free passage into Braj. And just with the appearance of Krishna, Kavi Karnapur explains how, just like the Lord's conch shell spirals out in a clockwise direction, with the appearance of Krishna, in that clockwise fashion, spiraling out, these sacrificial fires were all easily ignited. And the breezes and the fragrance and the sights and sounds from outer space, everything was so pleasing and soothing and sweet, like interaction with pure devotees. And then, but then Krishna, who was attracted by the beauty, sweetness, and charm of Braj and had his playmates all assembled there, as the play unfolded, and he actually succeeded in evading his divine protocol as being, you know, bound to the worship as the all-pervading Godhead. He was free to play. He found Ananda in the house of Nanda, and he revealed it to the world. So he needed to, first of all, establish the rules for the play. And he found that the playground, his eternal playground, Braj, was now the kingdom of a tyrant, Kamsa. And what kind of playground is this? Where a beautiful nurse approaches with poison to kill the child. And the air and the water were polluted to such an extent that even the birds were dropping dead and falling down. And the beautiful forest with its verdant meadows were repeatedly bursting forth into conflagration. And the beautiful bank of the Jamuna was a shore of death. And the beautiful animals in the forest were intermingling with rakshasas, man-eating beasts. And the beautiful sounds of the flutes of the cowherd boys had to contend with the roaring of rakshasas and the tornadoes. And the enchanting bird song was interspersed with melodies of death. It was a place completely filled with danger, Krishna found in Braj. And yet, when Narada Muni was later visiting Krishna's palaces, and he saw how Krishna liked to hear pastimes, his favorites of which were pastimes from Braj, Narada found Krishna's favorite pastimes were pastimes in Braj. He had a preference for that. And that Braj Leela is a play enacted within the medium of history, but not confined or limited to it. Containing the eternal seed of love as well as its fruition. And the birth of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord are eternally enacted as the play moves on. And this play was so beautiful because neither the Lord nor the creation were passive observers. It was an active participation. And the main theme is service, loving devotional service. Both the Lord and his servants becoming immersed in serving the other. And that's where enjoyment flows, from the pleasure of the beloved, who are willing to do anything for his pleasure. And there, the play is eternally reenacted in the hearts of those who are willing to do anything for Krishna's pleasure, not wanting to see Krishna, but willing and surrendered to serve in any way so that Krishna will appear and purify and uplift this world, and it begins with sadhana. So of course we have to cherish and follow the mood of Vasudev. Not that necessarily anyone could ever endure the sufferings and traumas which they, Vasudeva and Devaki, had repeatedly undergo. But the spirit of Vasudeva, the willingness, we must be prepared to embrace for Krishna to take birth in the womb of our own consciousness, to there go into our hearts from which he can reveal himself in our preaching, in our service to Srila Prabhupada, to spread the message of Krishna to all the world. So, but even though there was so much external suffering in the life of Vasudeva and Devaki, internally, they had the shelter of Krishna. They had the shelter of devotional service. And, you know, when Krishna finally came back and he killed Kamsa, and freed Vasudeva and Devaki, and he thought this would be a happy reunion, and he found that they were just standing there. Just standing there with folded palms. And Krishna thought, after so many years, he returns to his mother and father, and they're just standing there, prayerfully, reverentially. And Krishna started to cry. He wanted to be embraced. He did not want to be worshipped. He just started to cry. He looked at Balaram, for we've been gone for so many years. They've never even seen you, Balaram. They just haven't seen me since I left. And they're just, what is this? He wanted to be hugged, embraced. And he just started to cry. And then that Aishwarya Bhav. So much predominated the mood of Vasudeva and Devaki. It was drowned in the madhurya, the sweetness of the love of Krishna crying for their embrace. And they embraced Krishna, and milk was flowing from Devaki's breast. But then she again became sorrowful, and she told Krishna that you brought back the son of your teacher. Would you consider bringing back my sons? And Krishna was so happy to serve his servants that he looked at Balaram and said, let's go. He went to Bali Maharaj and said, and he was, you know, elated to have the darshan of Krishna and Balaram. How can I serve? Well, I'm going to take back these six sons. So these six sons of Devaki, he brought them back, the little babies that she lost at the time of their birth. Krishna and Balaram brought them back and placed them lovingly in her lap. And she was nursing them. And immediately, because Sanatana Goswami reveals that actually, you know, before she would let Nanda take Krishna, she was thinking he might get hungry, so she breastfed him in the dungeon. So her milk was Mahaprasad. When those six departed sons, who were formerly Kam, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madhavatsarya, came back and drank the Mahaprasad, then immediately, when she began nursing them, they all disappeared again. They were liberated. And she couldn't even, you know, think about being sorrowful that she lost her sons a second time, because she was just overwhelmed with the glory Any wonder combined, because they're predominantly Aishwarya Bhav, but Krishna only appears where there's Prem. So he drowned them in that Prem so that they could love him as their long lost son. So Bhakti Amama Vijanati Yavinyas Jaspitatuta. Only by pure devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you. Only in by that path can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So, as we approach Krishna for His pleasure, you know, most people serve because, you know, they either think they're going to get something from it, or as they advance, they actually delight in serving and they like to serve. But we shouldn't serve for our pleasure, or we'll never really see Krishna. We should serve for His pleasure. As Srila Prabhupada emphasized, don't try to see Krishna. What qualification do you have? But if you serve in such a humble way that Krishna wants to see you, He will appear within the core of your heart. And like His appearance on Janmashtami, even though it was the eighth day of the waning moon, the moon was full in ecstasy and joy. It was a full moon at midnight, illuminating the beautiful countryside. So Janmashtami is the most illuminating event when we approach Krishna for His pleasure. And His pleasure is to reveal Himself to us and attract our hearts and soften our hearts like butter so that He can steal them away and take our hearts and souls back home, back to Godhead, to live and play eternally with Him. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Could you explain that when Sri Goswami Pada Krishna appears like a single the scope of this spontaneous level of communication between Sri Goswami Pada and his devotees was very limited because everyone was in the mood of all different things, anybody is Prahlad Maharaj. So when Supreme Personality of God Himself appeared as Krishna, you know, there was ample scope for everyone to reciprocate with Him directly. But in this context, when Lord Krishna appeared as, before He appeared as Himself as Krishna, what is the significance of He again appearing as Lord Ramchandra before He actually came back as Lord Krishna Himself?
It's a progression. The history of all the divine avatars is a sequential progression of intimate exchange of love with the creation. So Lord Ramachandra is unique amongst all the avatars. He's somewhat shared with Lord Nrsimhadeva, but specifically, Lord Ramachandra is unique in that he is a balanced combination of Aishwarya and Madhurya, just like similar to Vasudeva and Devaki. Predominantly Aishwarya, but with elements of Madhurya that are not there in any of the other avatars. And that's why these sages of Dandakaranya, they were self-satisfied sages. But as the Atmaram verse states, even those who are self-satisfied within themselves, they become attracted by the pastimes of Krishna. So Lord Ram, he's not Krishna, but he does, in his pastimes, in his interactions, have a flavor of Madhurya. It's not pure Madhurya because it's mixed with the Aishwarya. But that Madhurya, and therefore the sages, they became enchanted. And they wanted, you know, Parikya, Bhav with him. And he said, well, I can't. I've got Sita and the vow to her. So he blessed them that your desire, which was evoked by Ram Lila, because it has. And the pastimes of Lord Ram, which they're so powerful because they are permeated with such suffering that would bring tears to the eyes even of Malechus. But within that pain, there is an undeniable sweetness. There is a flavor of Madhurya, which is only purely found in Krishna, but is mixed with the pastimes of Ram. So Lord Ram has his eternal abode, Ayodhya, with his eternal associates who would never want anything other than that sweetness of his love, which is mixed with Aishwarya. So that was amongst the sequence of the appearance of the avatars. The first avatar who actually interacted with some Madhurya, pastimes which are predominantly Aishwarya but mixed with Madhurya. And then that had to be followed by Krishna, because he told the sages that I will fulfill your desire, but he couldn't really do it. So those sages came back. The Shrutis became, you know, birds to sing the Upanishads, and the sages from Dandakaranya became the gopis with husbands who couldn't go to Krishna. But in the agony of being restrained by their husbands, gave up their lives. And in that agony, all residual influence of any previous conditioning was just burned to nothing. And then they entered into the association of the Nitya Siddhas with Krishna forever after. So yes, there's a charm in Ram Lila, which is somewhat like Krishna, but it's neither Aishwarya nor Madhurya. It's that transition. Anything else? Yes. All the pastimes, what? No. In case anyone didn't hear, the question was, if Krishna's, you know, eternally appearing in some universe, are all the pastimes exactly the same? No, they're not. They're not exact duplicates. There's some variation, and that's why even in Bhagavatam, we hear the same pastime in different places, and it's different. That's one reason, different universes. The other reason is different perspectives from different devotees because of their unique love. So the pastimes are eternally being reenacted, but not exactly the same, not stereotype repetition. It's spontaneous, and it flows according to the love, which is not static. So Srila Prabhupada appeared on Nandotsava to spread the good news of Krishna's appearance. And we want, just like Vasudev, who had to hand over Krishna, there's no question of possessing Krishna, keeping him to oneself. We only have Krishna as much as we give Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada's whole life is a dedication to giving Krishna. And that life mission is manifest in his books. So those books are displayed on the table in the back. So please, those of you who are leaving this pilgrimage place, take the message of Krishna, which conquers Krishna, which makes us conquered by Krishna and bound eternally in love. Take Srila Prabhupada's message with you in the form of his books and share Krishna with others. Anything else? Yes.
You know this breaking down manners, just the way there is a word for missing there, missing there, missing there, is there also another abode for Lord Chaitanya?
There's not another abode for Lord Chaitanya. Goloka Vrindavan exists in two dimensions. As we said, that's the place where Madhurya is prominent. Aishwarya is there. It's there in its fullest manifestation. But it's drowned in Madhurya. Every now and then it comes through a little bit. Like, you know, Srila Vishwanath Thakurai Thakur explains that Nanda Maharaj's village is this vast, sprawling city surrounded by palatial walls and forts in the hills and aqueducts bringing water in from the mountains with indoor plumbing to all the palaces. Well, where's that in Krishna book? It's covered by a pastoral, cowherd, simple village. But it's there, and every now and then it's like the sun coming through clouds. But then when the devotees become reverential and their love starts getting crippled, then Krishna covers it over again. So, Goloka Vrindavan is the realm where Madhurya covers Aishwarya. But that Goloka Vrindavan exists in two dimensions. The dimension where Madhurya is predominant is Braj. But Madhurya has an alternate feature, each of which is completely contained in the other. The alternate feature is Ashraya. Is what is the munificent giving? Madhurya? Audaya. Audaya. Munificence. Each is contained in the other in full. But there's two dimensions within that one golok. Where Madhurya is predominant is Braj. Where Audaya is prominent is Navadvip. There's no difference except in emphasis on the particular mood. Where absolute dedication to giving of Krishna is predominant, that is Audaya, that is Lord Gauranga's eternal domain. So it's not a different place, it's the same place, but a different dimension of the same place. It's not what we've done. It's got a different language too. It's called Bengali. Different culture. So, you know, but it's the same place. Different dimension of the same place. Different aspect of the same pastimes. Yes. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah.